These past 2 years have allowed me to bear witness to the struggles and joys of parenting going on in this congregation. And it feels appropriate that on my last day with you all, that it's a day that we spend honoring part of parenting, fatherhood. Papa's Day and its correlate Mama's Day are efforts by the Strong Families Coalition to honor the fullness of parenthood without sugarcoating the gritty realities of what parenting means in a society that really doesn't offer so much support for our families. And that's part of the significance of church as a place to offer profound and deep support. And in preparing for today, I looked at the Strong Families Coalition website and their materials, and I had to acknowledge that there's ways that the efforts are not created so equal. There's a lot more emphasis and energy that's been put into the Mama's Day kind of campaign, and not so much for the Papa's Day. And I think when I reflect on that, I wonder if it reflects that deeper struggle that we have had in the past 40 years since the women's liberation movement. We can deal with issues of womanhood and we struggle with what it means to be a mother and a woman, but it seems trickier for us to deal with what it means to be a man and what it means to be a father. And again, I think the UU congregation, one of our places is to create a space to deal with what it means to be a man in a world that there's forces that make men be so independent and, quote unquote, and strong, and weird meanings with what that means. And so today we are honored with three fathers who will offer testimonies, risking to break out of, I think, some of the cookie-cutterness of what it means to be a father and to share some of their own joys and struggles. We will start with Doug Sprague, and then Glenn Jacob, and then David Middleton.
I was 36 when I became a father. My then wife, Carol, gave birth to my wonderful son, Brandon. I was proud and happy, but surprised that my mind and soul so quickly made him a prime focus of my life. Someone had snuck in and installed a huge coaxial cable between us. I remember his first night home. Two-day-old Brandon was in a cribette near our bed. Carol and I got very little sleep, listening and worrying, hopping up countless times to check to see if he was still breathing. Wow. I realized that I was hardwired into another human being and fated to a lifetime of listening and laughing, wiping and watching, fretting and helping, loving and crossing my fingers. Love and pride and happiness were always there, but also the fear that this precious gift would get hurt or sick or die. I was on duty. That first night home, I couldn't do much to help, so I went to my backup position, silent cheerleader. Go, Brandon, go, go. And Brandon must have sensed that because he slept peacefully on. When he was about 6, our marriage dissolved, and I assumed physical custody. And I had a lively time balancing work and childcare and household tasks and my dating life. It was easier because I had a secure job that was very flexible. So I was better off than a lot of single parents. But I liked being a single parent, was a casual, cheerful, probably too permissive father with my worries hidden behind my smile. I remember my joy and relief when he would come home from school. He would break into a big smile when he saw me. He loves me and he's safe. Go, Brandon, go. When Brandon was 11, I found Natalie. The right life partner. At last, And as a bonus, she brought me another son, Chris, a happy addition, but another long-term loving obligation. Troubles. Brandon got off track in his early years at Hayward High, drugs and unsavory friends. But bless him, he realized it in the 11th grade and asked to go live with his mother in Bodega for his senior year. And we got transformation. Go, Brandon, go. Troubles. Chris got on drugs and alcohol in college and was on his way down. But bless him, he got into treatment. Transformation. He had 12 years of sobriety, but then relapse and the anguish of his decline and eventual death. My son for 34 years was gone, and there was a crack in my heart. It was a big help that Brandon had brought us the gift of a daughter-in-law, Megan, and go, Brandon, go, a grandson, Henry. It's been wonderful to see what a terrific father Brand is, attentive, concerned, fun, and loving. Although I sense Brandon is starting to become a parent to the aging me, I still have not given up my father role. We meet for our weekly lunch and laugh and share like two normal adults, but I am still having my fatherly obligation. Is he all right? How can I help him? And when he flew to Hawaii last Tuesday, I was on duty, helping his plane stay up. Go, Brandon, go.
So Darcy also asked me to say a few words about fatherhood. I feel like I must compare how I was raised by my father and how I ended up raising my own son. I have to say my father was not a bad father. There was no abuse, although I did get spanked when I was bad. But being bad is subjective. Was it because I talked back, or because I did not eat all of my vegetables, or maybe I told a lie? I think that my father wanted to be close to my brother and me, but we were never really friends. We were never really buddies. Again, not that he was a bad father, but he was what you would call emotionally distant. He had a hard, stressful job in an office. I remember when I was little, he would come home smelling of cigarettes, although most dads smoked in those days. And after a family dinner where we did get a chance to talk for a while, he and my mom would sit in front of the TV and drink a lot of beers and check out. This is not to say that we didn't have fun times. We threw the old baseball back and forth, and my dad told many fun jokes and puns. But I told myself when I had a kid, I would do a better job of being a friend to my child. And when I had a son, we had a great relationship when he was little. When Chris was a baby and a toddler, it was so easy. I was so good with him. I loved to hold him and carry him. I would calm him and make him sleep. I could make him happy and laugh. I still dream of those days. And when he was in elementary school, I was there in the parents' co-op that we were part of called Charquin School, helping out every Monday. But even then, I seemed to be making friends with the other kids in the class easier than being friends with my own son. And when he went on to junior high, he was obsessed with video games. That was all that he wanted to do or talk about. And I had no interest in video games. I was terrible at them. I mean, I tried, but I would get killed in about 2 minutes and get frustrated and angry. Plus, I was often tired out by my own busy, stressful office job, and after work, I would also often tend to check out. Anyway, as the years went by, we never really connected again as friends. Our interests were just different. We would talk about books and movies, but we were never really as close as I would have liked. And now he is living with his girlfriend's family and working full-time. I see him maybe once every few months. But I did see him yesterday. It was his 27th birthday. We saw Maleficent and ate at IHOP. We talked about our jobs and the movies we'd seen, but we still have trouble connecting on an emotional level. So I ended up being just the kind of father that my father was. Not a bad father, not a great father, but through whatever choice or genetics are involved, I do also seem to be emotionally distant. I don't have any good advice for you young fathers or future fathers out there. Just do the best you can with the abilities that you were born with. Be patient, be understanding, and do your best to stay friends.
This year, 42% of children who enrolled in kindergarten in the United States came from single-family households. In 6 years, it is projected that the percentage will increase. By comparison, in 1980, only 18% of students entering kindergarten came from single-parent households. Now, I am not here to weigh in on the composition of the ideal family, and I am certainly not going to decry the erosion of the traditional two-parent household. But I do find it striking to see the way in which our family units are changing in this country. Add to this the fact that two-thirds of single parents struggle with the costs of adequately providing for their families, and we can see some of the challenges that American families face today. There are probably a multitude of reasons why these changes are occurring, but I don't feel it a stretch to attribute some of this unconscious choice of some fathers to distance themselves from both the beauty and struggles associated with active child rearing. As President Obama said, "My father, I only met him once for a month when I was 10. I was probably shaped more by his absence than his presence." About 100 years ago, American psychologist John B. Watson claimed that women were not the only individuals biologically wired or equipped to care for young children. About 50 years later, Dr. Spock and his books, which at the time sold more copies than any other book other than the Bible, also called for the active involvement of fathers in the lives of their children. While the psychological, scientific, and medical communities have come out strongly in favor of fathers' involvement in the lives of their children, the reality is that this is not altogether commonplace in this country. I personally am appreciative of the tremendous joy and at the same time the deep responsibility associated with raising my daughters Emma and Maya with the support of my wife Lou. Sometimes, particularly when I am spending extended periods of time alone with my girls, I feel exhausted, I struggle with impatience, and I get headaches as I wrestle with the challenge of being a father raising two young, lively children. During these occasions, Lou will sometimes come home and jokingly say, looks like the girls broke daddy. However, some of the most joyous times of my life are those where I am able to be with my daughters. We play games like Daddy School, where I am the student and Emma is the teacher. And Maya often likes to pretend that she's a puppy. I have kept track of the cute things that Emma and Maya have said so that I don't forget them as they grow older. Some of the fun games we played when they were young were Hungry Crocodile or Scary Monster. They would say, "Daddy, you are Hungry Crocodile." And I would go, "Arr." And then Maya and Emma would flash the biggest smile and let out a blood-curdling scream, "Ah!" and run away. I remember when Emma, at age 2, went with us to Denny's, and the waiter came to the table and said, "What can I get for you?" And Emma loudly proclaimed, "I want mango. I want avocado." I recall Maya would look at holes that gophers created in our front yard, and she would say, "Gopher did this." She would cutely see any mess, inside or outside of our house, and when you have two children about the age of 2 and 3 years, you have quite a few messes. And so she would go around often saying, "Gopher did this." And this week I smiled as both Maya and Emma just couldn't wait until Sunday to give me the Father's Day cards that they made, so I got them on Wednesday and Thursday and said, the cute stories I could tell would take up a lot more time than I've been allotted. So I am left to ponder why many fathers are not actively involved in the lives of their children. The intense responsibility and joys that come with raising and providing for children still to this day disproportionately rest on the shoulders of women. Many in our society continue to espouse the virtues of the traditional family and traditional family values. Do some look in awe and admiration at fathers who are actually involved in their children's lives? At the same time, are same-sex couples forced to endure undue scrutiny and challenges when they choose to begin a family? When we hear the term deadbeat dad, do we assume that this derogatory name is earned because the father is neglecting his financial obligations to his family? Is this all that we as a society expect from him? Is this what he owes his children? So on this Father's Day, I'd like to salute women. I think of my grandmother on my mother's side of my family who grew up during the Depression in a largely Irish Catholic neighborhood in Boston. She never knew her father, and to hear that her life was actually more difficult due to the scorn associated with being born to a single mom saddens me. I feel that those like my grandmother and great-grandmother should have been held in the highest regard and should have continued to be held in high esteem and should be more fully supported by our society. My grandmother's mother died when she was when my grandmother was only 16, and so she was left with no immediate family. My grandmother, despite a challenging upbringing, was one of the most positive people that I had ever met. She brightened the room when she entered it, and my daughter, Imogen, is named after her. I would like to salute my grandma, Linda, who's here today. Who, after receiving virtually no support from the father of her children, became the primary care provider for her three young children. There was no maternity leave available to her. Within a day after giving birth, she had to go back to work against medical advice in order to support her children because the clinic where she was employed claimed that she couldn't use her sick leave because having a child really wasn't a sickness. In contrast, men would have their toenail removed and they were granted sick leave. Have women in our society been treated fairly with regard to expectations we have placed upon them as mothers? Is there a stigma assigned to the brave decision to raise a child on one's own? Have we historically and do we today provide adequate support and resources for mothers? So in the end, on this Father's Day, I want to thank fathers, mothers, and all those individuals who actively embrace the joys and the challenges associated with the important endeavor of raising, nurturing, and loving our children.
I'm really glad I read that feeling book again. When I think of the struggles that families face, it's really easy to see. You can talk about women's struggles or men's struggles, but really there it is all the effect of one struggle. We live in a society that forces us into particular ways of being. And it hurts us all differently, and it hurts women differently, and I think it tends to hurt men differently. And on this Father's Day, I want to salute the hard work it takes of men in this society to counteract all of the forces on you to be, I don't know, what are some of the words that you associate with being a man, those words that you feel are actually hurtful? How should you be as a man? Tough. Brave. Breadwinner. Courageous. Yeah. Decisive. So what does it mean if you, and I think necessarily with being a father, there are times when you will not be the breadwinner, when you will not be decisive, when you will feel weak. And those are not instances in which to shy away from being a man. Those are ways of being a full and healthy man. I really want to honor Doug, Glenn, and David. It is hard to speak out. This kind of service I've done with women before, but there's a culture for women to talk about our feelings and to share. And I think for what it means to be a UU church today, UU church is part of our calling, is to be a place where we can bring our full, messy selves. Because in that messiness and in that brokenness, we will find healing. We will find true fatherhood, and we will find true motherhood in all of those ways of being. May this church be a place to bring our fullness of selves, a fullness of womanhood, of manhood, of motherhood, and of fatherhood. My friends, there is so much distance in the world. This is a place, may this be a place of connection, of fatherhood and motherhood and all the other stuff in between. It takes a village. It takes love. Let Star King be a playground of the Spirit. Blessed be and amen.